Grammar and Tom Talk Teaching, a podcast about all things education presented by Sian Wickersham and Tom Breeze. Teachers' Curriculum Conversations with Dr. Mary Woolley. Hello and a warm welcome back to the podcast, where I'm joined by Emma's stunt double, Sian Wickersham.
Hello, everybody. I'm back.
She's back. And which is quite useful because our guest is a friend of the podcast who I've been doing a lot of work with, Dr. Mary Woolley from Canterbury Christchurch University. Hello, Mary.
Hello, Tom.
Joining us from Folkestone, Sian. I think. Is that right?
I'm in my office in Canterbury Christchurch today.
Rainy Canterbury. Rainy Canterbury. We've had the rain. It's gone. It's heading your way. And we've been working on a project, which means it's good because Sian knows less about this project. So
yes, so I've had a scan of the report and I've got lots of questions, like I'm sure all of the listeners will once they've had a chance to have a read. So I'm really excited to hear Mary and Tom sort of tell us a bit more about what they've been doing.
Yeah. So just to kind of spin back a bit. I know we discussed this a lot more, didn't we, last time you were on the podcast, Mary, but Emma and I met you at a conference where you were talking about a previous project about science-religion encounters in the classroom. So do you want to just sort of really quickly remind our listeners what that was? Because then it will be clear why we were particularly interested to kind of be friends with you and work with you.
Yes. We have a team of people here at Canterbury Christchurch who are interested in what happens when scientific concepts come up in the RE classroom and what happens when religious or ethical concepts come up in the science classroom, and how do teachers explore that and deal with those things when pupils ask those difficult questions. And one of the things that emerged from that was looking at the relationship that teachers have and the understandings teachers have of those different subjects. And we found that RE teachers didn't really have the same understanding of what was going on in science as science teachers did, and vice versa. And so we found that there wasn't much conversation going on between those teachers. And that when we met Tom and Emma, I think we then became interested in what conversations are teachers having in Wales at the introduction of a new curriculum. So we've got curriculum reform, really exciting time, but what opportunities are teachers having to talk to one another as they really put that curriculum into practice in their classrooms?
So you can see, Sian, as a person living here in Wales, working here in Wales, why that was of interest to us.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think as a primary teacher and primary specialist, cross-curricular working is obviously something that is quite baked into how we teach primary in this country, whereas obviously in secondary, it's been a real shift, I understand. So yeah, I was really interested to kind of read about how that shift is happening in some areas and then maybe less so in other areas, perhaps.
Yeah, there's plenty in the literature or kind of looking forwards towards curriculum for Wales when it was being proposed and co-constructed, particularly by friend of the podcast, Dr. Judith Neen, suggesting that this idea of breaking down the boundaries between subject disciplines was going to be more tricky in secondary than in primary for various reasons. So Mary, we hopped on the bandwagon of your research centre with Professor Bob, and we managed to get some funding.
Yes, we did. So Templeton World Charity Foundation is funding us, and there's three stages to the project. The first is reported here, as in it's just a survey trying to take a snapshot of what opportunities teachers have and with the quality of their conversations. And then the second part, we went into a school in Wales, didn't we, Tom? And we delivered some CPD and we recorded lots of conversations between teachers, and we're just working our way through those. So watch this space for some findings about that. And then we're also looking to set up some professional learning opportunities and some more opportunities for teachers' conversations over the next few months. So this is very much just the beginning of this project we've been lucky enough to work on.
Yeah, so Sian, as someone coming into this cold, we've got a report in front of us here about the survey that we did, and this was just trying to find out what secondary school teachers were up to, really, in terms of this idea first proposed by Donaldson in 2015, over 10 years ago now, this idea that if subject discipline boundaries could be broken down in a meaningful way, learning and outcomes should be better. And we've got some interesting findings out. I mean, as someone coming at this a little bit cold and also from outside of secondary world, I suppose, what kind of jumped out at you?
I think some of the positives really jumped out at me. I was quite surprised, actually, at how high some of the numbers are in terms of the kind of the 88% of teachers talking several times a week or once a week to colleagues about their and the content that they're teaching. Like, to me, that does seem quite high. You sometimes get this kind of stereotype of teachers being stuck alone in their classroom and never having a chance to talk to each other. And actually, that kind of debunks that a little bit, doesn't it? It seems like this stuff is happening perhaps more than we would expect, perhaps. But then I think the stuff across different AOLEs and how low those numbers are is quite interesting. So maybe this idea that we've sort of replaced subject departments with AOLE departments, perhaps, because obviously there are some really big cross-curricular links between different AOLEs that have been sort of separated. So I was sort of interested how low those numbers were. So yeah, some of the positives and some of the negatives really jumped out.
There's an awful lot in what you say there, Sian, isn't there?
I mean, sorry.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't come as having been a teacher and a history teacher, it doesn't come any surprise to me that teachers are finding the opportunities to talk to one another. And, you know, we know from training teachers that many teachers are just passionate about their subject. They're excited about the subject and they're excited about teaching it and their pupils' responses. And they're finding those in between spaces, in the corridors, in the break times, before school, after school, to have those conversations about what they're teaching. And, you know, isn't that, it might be formalised, but it looks to this that these are informal conversations happening in those in between spaces. But yes, it's interesting then, isn't it, that the majority of those are happening in the subject and some of those are happening in the AOLE, but there's far fewer of those conversations happening outside the AOLE, or that's what the teachers in the survey were reporting to us. I find that just not necessarily surprising, but interesting. And it raises questions about what we might want, what kind of conversations do teachers want to have, and what would be good for the curriculum and for their students.
Yeah, Dr. Judith Neen's paper several years ago now suggested that one of the issues in secondary was that teachers have a really strong sense of their subject as being kind of their thing and were really, really wary about having anything to do with other subjects, I suppose, really. Although, on the other hand, they did sort of think there was a potential for it to be good and interesting and exciting and enriching. But they really did feel that subject name in front of the word teacher, you know, on their job title was something really, really important to them. And I suppose, Mary, we were kind of less surprised, I suppose, that they tended to stick within their AOLEs. The options are there, aren't they, to talk to other ones?
So in the Science Religion Encounters Project, we had an anecdote that we would use, and it was actually about a child who in 1 week was going from learning about the Big Bang in RE and also learning about the Big Bang in physics. But the RE teacher didn't seem to know that the physics department was doing that, and the physics department didn't seem to know that the RE department was doing that. And in terms, we could just leave that child to make those connections for themselves and to look through those different perspectives and disciplinary lenses and come to their own conclusions. But we can't help thinking there would be more coherence if the science teacher was aware of what was going on in RE, and if the RE teacher was aware of what was going on in science, and you could help pupils make those connections and see the different perspectives and look at the different ways of knowing that are being explored within those different subjects or disciplines, really. So whether a curriculum is disciplinary or interdisciplinary, I think there's a great deal that teachers can learn, especially at a time of curriculum reform, when the subjects that you're teaching might be quite different actually to the subjects you learnt 10, 20, 30 years ago when you were at school.
I'm nodding furiously away here because I completely agree that curriculum coherence and connections between different areas of the curriculum are so important. And it's one of the things that we talk about a lot in the primary school is we can't expect children to be able to recall and remember discrete items of knowledge and skills and things unless they're able to connect them to what they already know, to be able to challenge, to interrogate those ideas in the light of the new information that they're learning, and then also draw those connections between different areas. We know that it helps children to learn things better, to learn things faster, to learn things deeper as well. So the fact that, yeah, you could have that child who's learning about the Big Bang in those two subject areas, oh my goodness, what a missed opportunity from a learning perspective, as well as obviously from a curriculum, a content perspective. Although I guess the two are kind of the same thing, aren't they, really?
Yeah, and then we come to something which we're not necessarily going to focus on today, but some of those big issues, those transdisciplinary issues that cross multiple subjects. For example, we're looking in this project at sustainability and climate change. And, you know, how do we approach those if teachers aren't having those conversations and don't know what other teachers are doing? How does that help our students? And we want to keep an eye on those students and their experience at the end of this.
One of the really big things that came out in the survey, I think, was a sense that when a subject teacher did get the opportunity to talk to another subject, or teacher of a different subject, their conversations tended to revolve around what they were teaching, the content of what they were teaching, you know, the topics or you know, when it happened, that kind of thing, rather than anything deeper about the purpose of the subject, the sort of why of the subject or the nature of the subject. And I suppose for all of us that have been in the classroom and, you know, been running from place to place and really kind of struggling to open up those little spaces, I guess to some extent that isn't a surprise. You know, if you only have very, very limited time, you probably are going to stick to the just, you know, what are we going to do next Wednesday with year nine type conversations. But it was really telling, wasn't it, Mary, that it didn't look like, you know, despite all the talk that we hear about Curriculum for Wales being so transformative and aspirational and teachers needing time and space and being given agency and autonomy, it looked like potentially there was a bit of a bottleneck there just in terms of the sheer capacity of them to have those conversations.
Yes. I mean, obviously, there are limitations of a survey. We don't, just because the conversations are less frequent, it might be possible that teachers are meeting up once a month and having very deep conversations about the purpose of what they're what is on their curriculum and why they're teaching what they're teaching, and those kind of select and deploy conversations that teachers need to have in terms of their longer term planning. So there are things that we don't know and that we want to go on and perhaps explore further. But yes, it does seem that the predominance of conversations is about what is being taught. And again, is that, what did you just do? Where are you up to with year seven? You know, what are you doing next week? Do you need the textbooks? Or is that some other conversation about, oh, did you decide to do this aspect of the content, or did you decide to do this aspect of the content? So, you know, it's always the way you're kind of open to Pandora's box of possibility and what these conversations might be. And we're just reporting on this snapshot at the moment. But we hope over the project to be able to get a bit deeper in finding out more about what those conversations consist of.
Yeah, and I think as well, the sort of practical considerations, the time and space stuff, is really interesting to kind of reflect on as well. This idea of, we would have the conversations if we had the time to. So maybe we do value them, but maybe not enough to prioritise making the time. And then also kind of jumping back to the AOLEs thing, I am sort of struck whenever I go to a secondary school, they are huge places, aren't they? Like, how often does the humanities department stand next to the maths department in the corridor? Probably never, because they're in two completely different buildings. And again, there's that kind of the actual kind of physical architecture of the school that could potentially be really affecting some of this stuff. And that could vary, right? School to school.
Absolutely. And I think physical architecture has a lot to do with it, and those opportunities, you know, whether there is a staff room where teachers come together, or whether people have departmental offices. I know Catherine Byrne a while ago now has written about that in her looking at the conversations that history teachers had. And, you know, that we also found when we broke it down a little bit later in the report that PE teachers are having a lot of conversations. And is that actually because they're outside, they're coming together, you know, they haven't got the walls breaking them down? Yeah, we don't know the answer to why that is, but we find these things interesting. So architecture is responsible for lots of different divides, and is built at a time, schools are built at a time with one idea, and as you shift your ideas about curriculum, you know, does the architecture support that? So it's interesting.
Wonder whether it might be to do with the fact that, you know, the other areas of learning and experience, I mean, for, you know, particularly for listeners who are less familiar with Curriculum for Wales, could be seen as just collections of subjects that have existed before. You know, for example, the expressive arts one is music, drama, art, dance, film and digital media, whereas PE in many schools have found themselves in this entirely new one called health and wellbeing, which is a complete sort of reconceptualization of kind of what's going on there to some extent. So maybe they feel that they're just in a whole new space and having to have those conversations, yes, as opposed to, well, how do we bring stuff that we already know together?
And isn't that exciting? You know, across Wales, you've got all these PE teachers having wonderful conversations about the purpose of what they're doing. And that is the impact of curriculum reform, and it's coming through at the level of the teacher, which I think is just really exciting to see.
Yeah, and I mean, this point about flexibility, I mean, Sian's kind of alluded to it there, hasn't she, about the fact that schools are big and the fact that departments are widely spread geographically. I know within my own area of learning and experience, it is often the case that music and drama are quite close together, but art always seems to be miles away. And of course, you've got timetabling as well. You know, we have those bells that go off, those buzzers that go off every hour and sort of rule our lives. There is another one as well, isn't there, Mary, which kind of came out a little bit in the survey, which again, you know, linking back to Dr. Judith Neen, who's a good friend of the podcast now, retired, she escaped from this place and from our clutches. But she suggested in one of her papers that in secondary school, although there's this sort of language around agency and autonomy for teachers in Curriculum for Wales to become curriculum designers, in the secondary school, for all of those reasons, there's a stickiness about that autonomy. There's a stickiness about that agency. It doesn't quite show up always in practice. And that came out in one of the responses, didn't it, about who was actually setting the agenda for these inter-subject conversations when they happened.
Yes. And again, it's tricky data to read in a way. But we definitely found that most teachers reported that it was a really positive school environment, and that it was a professional dialogue was encouraged. 80% of teachers said that it was a really friendly conversations that they were having. But we did then ask who controls the level of the conversation or topic of the conversation. 50% reported that in their school, senior leaders decide the focus of curriculum conversations. And you can imagine departmental meetings where the agenda, the items on the agenda might be set by senior leaders who said, well, you need to talk about this today, whether that's about target setting or you know, planning or something like this. Or as Continuing Professional Development Day, a CPD day, where, again, senior leaders have decided the purpose. Now, that's not to criticise senior leaders, because as you try and put a new curriculum into place, you need to put in some opportunities for curriculum conversations. But we're arguing that there should be time where teachers get the agency for them to decide what they think needs to be developed within their curriculum. And that seems to be what's encouraged within Curriculum for Wales. And that maybe there needs to be an element of trust within supporting those teachers to have those conversations. 40% of teachers did report that they felt they had the agency to decide the focus of the curriculum conversation. So it's a mixed bag, different teachers, and we haven't been able to break that down by subject, but different teachers are having different experiences, which you would expect.
Question for Sian now, actually, because you've come to us having worked in a relatively senior role in a multi-academy trust in England.
Yes, I have.
You're going to confess.
In a past life.
Yeah, in a past life.
Where are you going with this?
Well, where I'm going with this is that I am really interested in this question of how we sort of open up these spaces for these, you know, everybody agrees we want these discussions to happen, but there's some suggestions in the data that perhaps those spaces aren't opening up in quite the way that people want in secondary, either because people don't have time or perhaps there's, you know, there's the agenda being set from elsewhere and all that sort of thing. And I'm just kind of interested because I've never worked in England in a school. You know, you've got this multi-academy trust system where it's often sort of presented to us over the border that, you know, you have no agency, no autonomy. It's all coming down from some person, you know, you've barely ever met from somewhere else. But on the other hand, if you have actually got those sorts of layers that don't exist in Wales, you know, in Wales, you could crudely say that every school is trying to invent this wheel all by themselves. Mm. Whereas in a multi-academy trust, for all that it could be even less autonomous, you have actually got people whose job it is to kind of think about their stuff. I mean, what are your thoughts on that and your experiences on that? Because I definitely don't want to paint the picture that it's all terrible in England or equally that it's all terrible in Wales.
So, yeah, I actually feel like we did this pretty well in the MAT that I worked for. I won't name it. It could obviously be different now. It was a long time ago now, over 5 years ago. And I remember when I joined the Multi-Academy Trust from a kind of a local authority school, we had subject networks in the Academy Trust in a way that, so I was at the time the history lead, I think, and there was a history leads subject network. So all of the history leads from all the schools in the Academy Trust got together and we would have professional learning around how to lead history. And that was the first professional learning that I'd ever had on how to be a subject leader. So that's kind of from a primary perspective. And it wasn't that we were being told you need to discuss X, Y, Z. It was more, here are some things that might be useful for you to do in your school with your teachers to develop and improve the teaching of history across the primary school. And then the same went with our secondary heads of department. So it would all come from a heads of department perspective. And this as well, I think, is an interesting thing. So obviously in Wales, we have all sorts of different kind of leadership structures in schools. And now you might have an AOLE lead as opposed to a head of department and things like that. Whereas the Academy Trust sort of specified that each subject needed to have someone who was ultimately responsible for that subject. So those people would then get together and again, would have some professional learning around this is what it might be good to talk about in your department meeting. And yeah, some of that would be your more nuts and bolts, your timetabling, your targets, your data, you know, all of that stuff. But then other stuff would be more of the deeper conversations around subject and around curriculum. But then we also had quite a lot of kind of set curriculum, not so much at secondary than at primary, but I wouldn't be surprised if that's changed in the 5 years since I left. You know, it was kind of the writing was on the wall, I think, for people being able to make their own curriculum decisions a little bit. So there you go. That's my little overview. It was definitely cleaner, you know, definitely cleaner. But I don't know, because I'd written down on my notes here with that point around 40% of teachers being given agency to decide the focus of curriculum conversations. I've written down sort of, is this a bad thing? You know, like from a school improvement perspective, I can totally understand why a senior leader might want to specify what it is that we want to be talking about.
It's that balance, isn't it?
Yeah.
And it comes back to the quality of teachers, really. But, you know, I can imagine there's many teachers coming in from Tom's course that are quite passionate about music and the kind of changes they would like to see on the music curriculum, I think there's a balance to be had, and harking back to something else you were saying there, it's important. I mean, I know lots of people on our team passionately believe in as well the power of the disciplinary conversation, so we're not arguing to not have that. I really would like, you know, history teachers to have an opportunity to come together with history teachers, and I am, as to say, I train history teachers, and talk about that. And being able to do that, I think that comes up again really in this report. People are looking for those opportunities to do that both within and beyond the school, and actually through having a conversation within your subject, you're then maybe able to articulate your subject better when you're having a conversation with somebody who's not in your subject. So I think one of the questions we asked about was what would help teachers have deeper conversations with colleagues in other subjects. And one of the things they came back with was subject-specific networks to support professional learning. And we thought that was interesting because they weren't asking for deeper subject knowledge. They were asking for kind of more opportunities for communities and networks and so on, perhaps beyond the school, to build that confidence, I think, in new ideas about how to teach the subject, or seeing what other people are doing and being able to share.
Yeah, I mean, this chimes exactly with an experience we've had on the PGCE secondary here, trying to tackle this idea of working across subjects, where I think initially we slightly miscalculated how difficult this stuff is. And we started from the point of asking our subject specialist secondary student teachers to start working and explaining their subjects to other subject specialists. And after that, when, you know, it was really, really hard, we realized that actually we needed to start from an earlier point in that learning process. We actually had to give time for them to get their own story straight about what their own subject was and wasn't, and what was kind of important about it. And it led me to reflect on the fact that having got rid of the curriculum, you know, last version 2008, in which subjects were sort of there and they were named and they were defined, we've suddenly got a need, which we didn't have before to the same extent, to be able to get our story straight about what our own subject is. So I think in a funny sort of way, I think perhaps we all got a bit distracted in secondary, both in ITE and in schools, in some schools, with this idea of jumping straight into working across subjects. And now there is a sense that people are realising that getting your own story straight is important. So those subject-specific networks feel like they are an essential prerequisite to having these discussions.
Yes. I mean, again, it's one of those things where you wish you'd asked a follow-up question, don't you? Because we don't exactly know what teachers were conceptualising when they said that. But when we gave a list of different things to teachers and said in the survey and said which of these would help you have deeper curriculum conversations, the number one thing they said was time. Pretty much every teacher said, if I had more time, I'd have deeper conversations. And that's not surprising. We all want more time. But this was the second thing that they picked out of quite a long list. And whether that's identifying a need that teachers in Wales feel that they need some more network opportunities, and they want those to be subject specific. So I think this is really interesting, and that you have better interdisciplinary conversations if you have a strong sense of what your discipline is first.
What is the status of sort of subject networks in Wales, Tom? Like, is there stuff that's going on? Because I know in England there are ones sort of like big ones, aren't they? Like the maths hubs and things like that. They do lots of work on subject networks.
Well, again, I mean, and I think it'd be interesting to see if Mary's got anything to say on this as well. But from a music point of view, it is the case, and I've spoken to at least one of the music subject networks quite recently, and they've sort of become aware, and I mean, this is going to sound really disrespectful to them, it's not at all, because England has had an awful lot going on, as we know, that's needed concentrating on. They've sort of become aware that the issues in Wales are not the same as the issues in England, because, you know, you've got a load of other problems that we don't have, and we've got a load of problems that you don't have. And so I think there's been a sense that the subject, certainly for music, the subject associations have been quite focused on, you know, for example, trying to save the subject in England, and are now realising that Wales needs a different kind of support for its subject specialists. And maybe the Welsh teachers have sort of drifted away And now there's a concerted effort to try and bring them back into the fold, certainly in the music scene. And I don't know what the case would be for history, Mary, whether there are subject-specific networks that are sort of serving Welsh teachers and dealing with Welsh problems.
To be honest with you, Tom, I haven't explored it. And so I wouldn't like to speak out of turn. I mean, I know the Historical Association does lots of work, and there are history teachers in Wales that are part of the Historical Association. But I have brought this to the attention, this particular statistic, so people on the Historical Association Secondary Committee. I think it's interesting as well, because there is a lot of CPD going on in Wales around curriculum for Wales. And there's this principle of subsidiarity as well. So in comparison to that multi-academy trust, or some multi-academy trusts, where there might be shared schemes of learning and shared PowerPoints that everybody is doing, we know that that's not the principle that is being followed in Wales. And yet, I don't think that's what teachers are asking for. I think they're saying, you know, we don't want to do the same thing. We just want to talk to people who are facing the same challenges and see how they're exploring it, because that will help us in the way that we will explore it in our classroom. So I think that's some work we still need to do in kind of mapping what professional learning opportunities teachers are finding. And again, in the RVE, which we're closely connected with on the project, you know, there are lots of different things happening all over Wales for supporting this quite new subject again.
And so, I suppose, you know, although, Sian, you were previously marvelling at the size of secondary schools, a lot of departments have only got one person in them. And how hard is it to actually come up with the nature and purpose and the red lines and the non-negotiables of a subject all by yourself?
On your own. Yeah, I was also struck by how the two things that came out most, the more time and then the subject-specific networks, to me, they almost are in conflict with each other. Because if we put subject-specific networks in place, that's going to take time, you know, and teachers are saying they need more time. But actually, if we did it, if we put the subject-specific network in place without giving more time, would there be trouble with engagement with it? Would there be appetite for that professional learning, even though teachers are wanting it? Purely from a practical perspective, we know that teachers are so time poor.
Yeah, I mean, we actually found trouble, didn't we, Mary? Even getting survey responses was harder than we expected because people are so busy.
Mm. Yes, I mean, I think what teachers want to know before they commit to some kind of professional learning or CPD is that it's going to be high quality and that it's going to be relevant to them. And, you know, because time is so short and money is often an issue with these things as well. But actually, the third part of the project, we're just beginning to put together, aren't we, Tom, some ideas around bringing some teachers together, both in music, which Tom's leading, and in RVE. So and looking at, you know, talking to some teachers more closely, following them through a period of professional learning, and seeing how that shifts the conversations they're having with other teachers in the school as well. So that how new knowledge and the opportunity to come together with others in your subject can build confidence in having some of those more tricky conversations that you might have about negotiating your subject on the curriculum.
I really liked that stat as well. I think you say teachers in Wales are brave because they're having the difficult conversations, or they're not shying away from the difficult conversations. Maybe that was more about the kind of meaty issues with the learners. But I thought that was quite interesting, because I wouldn't have been surprised to see a much higher percentage of people saying they shy away from those conversations. But again, it's not that we don't want to have those conversations, and we're able to do it in a way that seems quite friendly because people say that these conversations are friendly. It's just maybe the lack of opportunities for them, the lack of time. I'm coming back to time again.
Yeah, I think there's two things there. One, I'm with you, Sian. I expected more teachers to be saying, yeah, we never get into those sensitive issues. But only 30% of teachers reported avoiding sensitive issues and in their conversations with other teachers. Mm. And we don't know what those sensitive issues are. But that's good. The majority of teachers are broaching difficult subjects. One thing that we came across, though, is in the literature as we were preparing for this, is there's quite a lot about teachers having very friendly surface level conversations, and that it's easier to do that than it is to actually dig a bit deeper and get into some of the areas where your subjects might conflict in some way, or you know, the deeper, more ethical, philosophical issues that might abound around curriculum. And that's also what we're interested in. So that does come through a little bit in the survey and the dialogues that we've recorded between teachers. We're getting get into that a bit more deeply and try and say, you know, this is... The literature that we looked at, they talk about surface level conversations at one end of the spectrum, and at the other end of the spectrum, something called critical colleagueship, where you've worked with those people and you know those people well, and you can take criticism from them. Mm-hmm. And you know that in taking criticism from them, it's going to actually improve your curriculum offer or improve your teaching in some ways. And I think as we think about the colleagues we've had over the years, we know which ones, don't we, that, you know, you say, oh yeah, no, that's all going very well, thank you very much for that, and the ones who go, okay, well, you know, here I'm willing, you know, I think Tom and I are getting towards the critical collegiative end of things now, aren't we, Tom? With oh, yeah. Gloves off, and we're able to tell one another what we think. But it does, that takes time in sense of a chronological time, not just in one conversation that you're actually going to get in there and, you know, get the gloves off and tell people what you think. So it's about time to build those relationships.
There's also a real danger, isn't there, of we've said this in various other episodes, I think, of offending somebody else by kind of thinking things about their subject which they don't like. I mean, you know, maybe this is an arts thing, I don't know, but there are cliches around the arts subjects which, you know, you've got to be a little bit careful. I know Fortley and Savage talk about the cherished ideas and ways of thinking that every subject contains. And I know we've used that as a guiding quote down here, because you can say something about what goes on in somebody's subject that can really kind of do an awful lot of damage to your relationship with them. And then we're back to understanding the nature and the purpose of subjects, aren't we?
Yeah,
and
I think so. And We all have our little jokes, don't we? I mean, I might have said something about geography at some point in my career as a history teacher. But when we go back to some of the work on science and religion, actually, that started off at the beginning of these projects, there's work that talks about respect, and there is a need for mutual respect. And that's within the literature on science, religion, rather than on school subjects. But I think if what we want is that pupil to experience curriculum well, that broad and balanced curriculum across all subjects, then we need to make sure that beyond the jokes, we're showing a real knowledgeable respect for all the subjects that are on the curriculum and that these pupils are expected to take part in, really, on a daily basis. I don't think we can do that without knowing what is happening and why it's happening within other subjects, which comes back to the importance of finding time for these conversations.
I'm sort of interested in this idea around respecting each other's content, respecting each other as teachers, and then the level of trust that it comes to there as well. Because sometimes I think when there is that potential lack of respect, maybe on some level, or maybe just a lack of understanding is a better way of kind of thinking about it, we do slip into saying these things to each other, but also potentially to the learners, that can sometimes really damage a relationship with a whole subject. So on the primary PGC, I teach mathematics and numeracy. That's my kind of primary subject. And in my very first session, I remember when I started here, one of my colleagues here said to me, you're going to need to spend a little bit of time talking to them about how we don't hate maths and numeracy. And actually, maths and numeracy is something that we all need to become good teachers of, and we need to value and we need to model that. And I thought to myself, that's ridiculous. I'm not going to say that. So I sort of asked the question, like, who here would feel confident teaching maths and numeracy? And I get sort of one or two hands. And it's interesting to me how actually we can go into teaching, and obviously as primary school teachers, we're teaching all of the AOLEs, but yet we can have particular relationships with subject that often are shaped, I think, by our own experience and perhaps sometimes insecurities that we might have ourselves. And then they can really shape our attitudes towards that subject full stop. And I wonder whether there's something in that a little bit, like we're almost scared of each other a little bit.
And I think for some subjects, we have quite a childlike version of it,
yeah,
because of the way, you know, the curriculum in both England and Wales leads towards basically doing three subjects at A level, or, you know, if you're going to do A levels, and we become specialists very early, and we drop subjects at 14, or in some schools in England even younger. And so this childlike version of what that subject is, I mean, the research on maths is extraordinary, isn't it? There's children, yeah, as young as two will have a negative view on maths based on their mothers and what they say about maths. But I think we can extrapolate from that. And, you know, oh, history is just boring. It's all in the past, you know. And, you know, religion, oh, why would you want to study that? You know, we don't do that in our family. And, you know, and so on. And these, I think, that's why we need to be really strong within our subject communities of understanding and sharing the purpose of our subject. But I think we need to be able to do that across our teaching communities as well. Mm-hmm. And if it's worth, you know, my child spending 80 hours of the year in your lesson, then tell them why it's worth them doing that. And make sure that those pupils understand why they're there, and let's have a respect and a knowledge-informed respect of what those subjects are doing for those pupils on the curriculum. Mm. Yeah, and all the more maths, better.
I'm aware that we're running towards the end of our slot in this studio, but it's nice that we've ended there with maybe a sense that we've got things to learn from primary, those of us in secondary.
Or maybe.
No, certainly that this kind of thing about primary teachers, you know, needing to get to grips with teaching things that they may have had a bad relationship with, you know, in their own schooling, suddenly becomes relevant to us in secondary because, you know, I was doing expressive arts AOLE last week, you know, music, drama, art, and people had usually dropped the other two subjects at 14 and they were coming together. So there's definitely loads in there. I suppose we should look forward now, Mary, to what we're going to be doing next in the project. I know you sort of hinted at it in an earlier answer, but just particularly so our listeners can perhaps be, you know, on the alert for it happening. What are we up to next?
So I think you, Tom, are going to be organising a little bit of professional development for a small number of music teachers. We're going to be asking them to have some conversations with other people in their school and see how those conversations develop in response to that. And we're also going to run some sessions for teachers of RVE. And in some ways, we have chosen those subjects. I mean, partly because it fits with the subject's knowledge and the expertise on the team, but also they're subjects which can be quite isolated within a school community. And I think they fit with this pattern of quite often people have dropped those subjects quite young, or they, you know, and they don't necessarily have a mature understanding of what those subjects can offer. And the subjects need to fight for their position on the curriculum and for other people to understand those. And what we're hoping to create actually is some professional learning resources that show examples of where teachers are having deeper dialogues, and to give teachers the opportunity to get to that point, and to encourage schools really to value those conversations that teachers are having about the curriculum, both within and across subject boundaries.
Yeah, that sounds really exciting. And yeah, that point that you made just at the end there around actually schools valuing the conversations is quite important, isn't it? Because if we value the conversations and we can see examples of what that looks like, and we think, I want this for my teachers, then maybe we're going to make time for it as a leadership team.
So here's an anecdote from Estonia, Sean. I was speaking this project at a conference in Finland. I was lucky enough to go over there. And at the end of my presentation, a teacher from Estonia came up to me and she said, well, we do this in my country. Every week we have an hour when we're expected to talk to a teacher from a different curriculum subject. And therefore, over the year, we find out about lots of different subjects and what they're doing on the curriculum. So in some ways, it sounds like this is hugely aspirational. But in other ways, Estonia doesn't even have interdisciplinarity on their curriculum. It's a disciplinary curriculum, but teachers are finding out what other teachers are doing in the school. And I think that if we're talking about teacher agency and we're talking about curriculum form feeding right the way through from government policy shift right the way down into different classrooms, then we need to be looking at the different processes are involved, and the conversations teachers are having needs to be at the heart of curriculum reform.
Lovely. Well, I think we'll leave that a deep dive there before I expand on the need for more non-contact time for teachers and make myself unpopular with our government overlords again. Let's move on to the famous short slots. And Mary, you've done your homework because you're very good. What have you got that is interesting?
Well, the report, the full report, I mean, we've just touched upon the surface, what we've called the executive summary, haven't we, really, in this conversation? But we have also broken that down by different AOLEs, haven't we, Tom? And we've broken it down according to some of the different subjects and looked at the different conversations that the teachers are having. So, you know, I could happily spend the next year writing about some of this data, really. And it gets, you know, we want to know more. It's only a survey. It's just taken a snapshot. But we think that's exciting. And within that, also, there's lots about sustainability and climate change. But we might talk about that another time.
And all of that is on a very nice Substack called Nicer News.
Yes. And we'll put the link to that somewhere in here, won't we?
We will. And I should probably clarify to listeners that it's not nicer because we only have nice conversations and unthreatening conversations. It's because the research centre, which has kind of hosted this project, is the National Institute for Christian Education Research. Did I get that right, Mary?
Yes.
Marvellous.
Yes, you did. We do lots of work with the many Church of England and Catholic schools in England and beyond.
Yes. So nicer news, news that is both nicer and from nicer. Something to try, Mary?
Something to try. Well, I was doing a lovely impact evaluation for the Historical Association recently on teaching economic history. And one of the teachers recommended a book called Sea of Poppies by Amitav Ghosh. And it's been an absolute delight. It's kept me going through the 10 darkest weeks of the year, reading this trilogy in the kind of lead up to the Opium Wars in 1840. And I feel that the historical research within it has been fantastic. And I feel completely enlightened about a period of history and a topic that I knew very little about. So if you want a bit of reading to see through, then go and have a look at Amitav Ghosh and Sea of Poppies.
Brilliant, thank you. That sounds like it's right up my street, so I'll definitely get that.
Great.
And that brings us to the end of another episode. So thanks to Dr. Mary Woolley, who's joined us from Canterbury today. Also your colleagues, Dr. Emily Sayers, Katie Clemmy and Professor Bob Bowie. And from us over here in Cardiff, we will be back in your ears with something else in 2 weeks' time. Bye for now. You've been listening to Emma and Tom Talk Teaching, a podcast about all things education presented by Sian Wickersham and Tom Breeze. The special guest this episode is Dr. Mary Woolley from Canterbury Christchurch University. Thanks to Mary for joining us down the line. Podcast artwork is by Beth Blandford and the music is by Cameron Stewart. Technical support from Peter Lambern and the studio manager is Adrian Rapps. We'll be back in a fortnight with something else interesting. Until then, take care and enjoy teaching.